is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing his column in Real Clear Politics about the esteemed professor and president of Princeton University, Christopher Eisgruber, and decisions he's made these last years that are troublesome to everyone who comes across them now that the fever has lifted. What fever, John? The language fever of these last years. And it begins with systemic racism. Peter, a very good evening to you. The language systemic racism. It was invented some time ago. I'm not sure its origins. It's been used popularly these last years, repetitively. And I confess that it wasn't until I read a recent book by Sean McMeekin, a professor at Bard College, about communism and its language. Where did it come from? It came from Babeuf in the 18th century, and then Marx in the 19th century, and then Lenin in the 20th. But it fell into disrepair because it didn't work. The economies fell apart. So they had to come up with a new way to approach the problem of communism, and that was Stalinist dictatorship. And under Stalin, who was a rudely educated man who read incessantly but was not gifted in any fashion, he decided that he needed enemies, that the five-year plans were failing, and he needed to blame somebody. They invented language, and one of them that I've always liked is kulak. A kulak was some peasant who owned more than 3 acres, condemned as you're the source of famine in the land, or wrecker. A wrecker is somebody who, with a pickaxe, cannot dig the White Sea Canal by himself. But you have enemies, and that empowers you and the secret police. That's how it worked for Stalin. Now, I know that sounds far-fetched from what you're writing about, but it occurs to me now that the fever has lifted, that systemic racism was the same charge as you're a kulak or you're a wrecker. How do you defend yourself? Good evening to you, Peter.
Good evening, John. Yes, unfortunately, this terrible way of thinking, this kind of intellectual sophistry is back. And we should distinguish, though, systemic racism, especially how it's used in the university world, from racism. Now, racism is real, and it has it still exists in the United States. It's familiar to everybody. It's when individuals or groups discriminate on the basis of race, color, or national origin. That conduct is to be condemned unequivocally. And systemic racism, you can say in the United States, it actually has existed. Systemic racism is said to inhere in a society's unwritten norms, its shared beliefs, its basic political institutions, even in private associations. And we've had systemic racism in the United States. Slavery was systemic, at least in the South. Jim Crow was systemic, at least in the South. But the claim on America's university campuses today is that they suffer from systemic racism. Indeed, the whole country continues to study from systemic racism. That indeed, the systemic racism is invisible but pervasive. And to deny that you yourself are subject to systemic racism is only further proof of how much you are captive to this systemic racism.
President Christopher Eisgruber writes a letter in 2020, and the Department of Education at the time, that was the late Trump administration, found the letter disturbing in that it was accusing Princeton of systemic racism. And the Secretary of Education at the time took Mr. Eisgruber's words not as rhetoric, but as a revelation, and moved to say, therefore, you have violated, and there are codes in our law where you're denied funds because you're demonstrated racism. Mr. Eisgruber backed down by calling the letter from the Department of Education specious. Then asked, I take from your reporting, to give an example of systemic racism at Princeton. What he came up with was, well, it struck me as witless. He said, we have 9 departments about European culture. We have one department about Africa. Peter, I don't even know where to comment on that.
you're right to be speechless. On the other hand, here we are in a broadcast, so we've got to gather ourselves and respond to him. This is his only concrete example of systemic racism, of how systemic racism persists at Princeton. How could it possibly be 9 programs in European languages and just one relatively small program in Africa? Well, let's begin first with the acknowledgement that in 2024, actually, Princeton should be engaged in the serious, rigorous study of Africa, home to 1.5 billion people. By the way, an arena in which the United States is competing with China, in which authoritarian principles are clashing with those of freedom and democracy. But there's an excellent explanation of why Princeton has 9 departments in European languages and why Europe is at the center of liberal education. There are 2 kinds of answers. One, these are the origins of American civilization, of the American constitutional order has roots in Europe. It is natural for liberal education in America to begin with our own roots and our traditions. But there's another, in a way, more important reason. Well, what is liberal education that Princeton has Princeton supposedly offers? It's education for becoming a responsible citizen of a free society. Well, the tradition of rights protecting democracy developed distinctively within Western civilization. Therefore, it is entirely appropriate that Western civilization be the focus of liberal education, Princeton. Now, I have to immediately emphasize that it's also appropriate that as one ascends through liberal education, one encounters other peoples, other nations, and other civilizations. But the core of the foundation is both what's one's own and what most clearly teaches the principles of freedom and democracy, which organize constitutional democracy in America.
And the puzzle then, since my education is built according to the principles of the 1960s and 1970s, I was educated liberally, liberal education. And that was built on venerating Roman law and English common law and the Greeks and the Romans and the classics and reading Western literature, the invention of the novel in the 18th century. That was the education I was given. At no point was there then, nor is there now, a consideration that that was systemic racism. It was an education.
Go ahead.
Christopher Eisgruber certainly must know this, Peter. That's a puzzle. He was educated the same way.
How could he not know that? And also, how could he not know what we learned from Glenn Lowry, who's a great professor of economics at Brown University, an African American who gave a speech in 2021 following the George Floyd's riots of summer of 2020 amid COVID. And the speech was on the case for black patriotism in America. And he makes some very important observations. Some of them are empirical observations about what has happened in the United States over the last 75 years. That means after Brown versus Board of Education, after the civil rights movement of the 1960s. Well, what's happened in the United States? A vast black middle class has developed. You see, and we celebrate the influence of African Americans everywhere. And as Lowry emphasizes, there are 40 million African Americans in the United States, and as a group, they represent the richest and most powerful population of descendants of Africans in the world. We've got problems in the United States for sure. What country doesn't? But systemic racism, a racism that inheres in our unspoken norms and our basic political institutions, does not exist.
The puzzle, it gets deeper than that, because it lingers. The puzzle is to condemn the heroes of the last 1,000 years. And the product of that last 1,000 years is the freedom we have to examine this condemnation.
Exactly.
And it struck me, you're in the academy, so you hear things automatically. I have to read about them in your college. The professors of the departments that Mr. Eisgruber identifies as what, systemic racism?
Yes.
Those professors are gifted human beings
who've
been privileged to spend their lives reading and writing and attending lectures and giving lectures to young people. They are the inheritors of traditions. Their teachers are gone, so they continue the tradition and they pass it on to the next generation. It's grotesque to condemn that. That is the way we teach young people to be worthy citizens. Does Mr. Eisgruber, you've written about him. I've read him for years when he removed Woodrow Wilson from the Woodrow Wilson School. I puzzled, what is this? Is he aware of what I'm saying and yet it's politically useful for him to maintain this other thinking that we condemn them as wreckers and kulaks?
I don't know what's going on in his heart, but I can tell you in the spirit of the question you've put, by condemning what Princeton has stood for, by disregarding the manner in which the American constitutional tradition prepares us to ask questions, encourages to reform our nation in light of our founding principles, which we have done over the last almost 250 years. The president of Princeton University is contributing to the deprivation of an education that is liberal in the traditional sense for Princeton students. And that does not only harm to them, but it harms the nation.
Cancel culture. Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing at Real Clear Politics about systemic racism charged by the president of Princeton University against the university that I venerate. When we come back, is this another example of cancel culture? What happened to cancel culture? Did it get canceled? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.